Blog Talk Radio.
Tune for more gross, stupid, and morally deficient funny stuff. Thank you.
Hey, welcome to the Disinspector Trucker Radio Show. I'm your host, Jeremy Johnson. I'm here with my co-host, Chris Bikerson. We have a nice show lined up for you tonight. We have many things to talk about, including my superior intellectual abilities and Chris's mental state. Chris, how are you doing tonight, my brother?
The bastards ain't killed me yet, Jeremy.
Yeah, they're on their way. Hold on. I got a phone call to make. Hey, so, okay, I won't. You know, I kind of wanted to talk about something right away. And, you know.
I'd like to shoot you in the ass with the BB gun. Lay there in the tall grass and laugh at what I'd done. Put a blood blister upon each bun. I'd like to shoot you in the ass with a BB gun.
I don't think that was a song that the liberals were singing to Kim Potter after she was found guilty today of two counts of manslaughter, one in the first and one in the second degree. Kim Potter, for those of you that don't know, is a police officer that mistakenly withdrew her pistol rather than her taser and shot Dante Wright in the back during a traffic stop in which he was resisting arrest. and ended up, unfortunately, for him and his family, he was killed in that incident. I don't wish ill will on anybody. I don't wish anybody to be hurt or killed, but this country and the Constitution was founded on law and order. And this could have all been avoided if Mr. Wright would have just followed the law and would have listened to the orders given to him by the police department, and specifically Kim Potter, when they had his hands behind his back. They were in the process of arresting him, and he chose to try to flee, causing Kim Potter to, in a panic, draw her service weapon rather than her taser, and mistakenly shot the poor kid. I say poor kid because he lost his life. He was 19 years old. And a lot of people disagree with my stance on it, and I don't care. Yeah, I have an opinion. You have an opinion. And after I went through social media and after the guilty verdict was read, and I kind of scroll. I'm kind of a troll. And sometimes I have to throw in some just to rile people up just a little bit, because why not? what I witnessed on social media, very similar to the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. And that is people being rude. And I'm going to tell you something. I don't see a lot from the right that were being rude to anybody else for saying, good, I'm glad she was found guilty. I've seen a lot from the right that were commenting, say, this was an injustice. This was wrong that she was found guilty. They said their piece. I think many of us have feelings, mixed emotions about it. But they certainly didn't call her a killer. I did see a few of them that say, well, he was a criminal. He deserved what he got. I don't agree with that statement either, that somebody deserves death. We're not the judge, jury, and executioner. That's what the court system's for. And that's what route Dante Wright should have took. And he would still be alive today if he would have took that route, but he didn't. And because of his actions, not only did he affect his life, he affected somebody else's life that was just trying to do her job, in my opinion, my humble opinion. Excuse me. I got to apologize right away because I've kind of got the sniffles and a light cough. Yeah, everybody thinks, you know, they see a sniffle once and, oh, my God, he's got COVID, run away. I don't go anywhere. Basically, I sit at my table all day. That's where I'm at home right now. So I got out of the truck for a few days, but I've been observing a lot of stories on social media, and that was the big one. That was the big case that we've all been watching. Before I turn this over to Chris, I have a question for the audience. So we've heard, like, Kyle Rittenhouse, I mean, I felt like I was living in a jail cell with him during his trial. I mean, they covered every second of that trial. Kim Potter, they covered every second of that trial. But you know who we're not hearing anything from? Is that trial in, or not the trial, but the case in Waukesha, Wisconsin, where that man ran over people at just enjoying themselves at a parade and killed those people and injured 60. We don't hear a word out of mainstream media about that, do we now? So if you're not paying attention and you haven't been paying attention, let me just remind you that the media picks and chooses the narrative. They follow the stories they know are going to have high emotions that will favor them and their stories. They know they can't spin this Waukesha, Wisconsin deal. There's no way you can spin it to make this guy out to be the victim like they do with, you know, the Kyle Rittenhouse case. The people that Kyle Rittenhouse shot and killed in self-defense, they made them out to be the victims. Dante Wright, in this case, was killed, shot and killed by a police officer, and they're trying to make him out to be the victim. Again, it's unfortunate he lost his life. It's honestly a sad deal. However, nobody wants to take accountability for their criminal actions. Nobody. And that's where we're at in this country, Chris. What say you on this matter?
Well, I tell you, first and foremost, anytime you deploy a weapon, you are responsible for what happens as a result of you deploying that weapon. And that applies to a Brooklyn Center police officer. That applies to an actor on a movie set. And point blank period, no pun intended there, you're responsible when you deploy a weapon. And this firearm was deployed incorrectly. I understand that she was going for a taser. It was accidental, not intentional, but ultimately you're still going to be held accountable for that manslaughter charge. On the other hand, talking about the victim there, Dante, something to keep in mind. Anytime you decide consciously to get into a fight with someone who's armed, understand there's a weapon there. And it may intentionally or accidentally end up getting discharged. So just not a real smart thing to do to pick a fight with somebody that's armed, even if you don't believe they're going to intentionally shoot you. But one thing that brings up in my mind, and I'm not using this as any means of taking away from the responsibility of the officers involved, but there's a bad design here. This is not the first time that's happened. There was another incident a few years ago, I believe on New Year's Eve, out in San Francisco at a train platform, where the same thing happened. Suspect was fighting with the police. Officer went to subdue him with the taser, pulled out his handgun instead, and shot the guy when he meant to tase him. And I believe there was also a similar incident in, I'm wanting to say, New Jersey or maybe New York. So in any case, this is not the first time this has happened. And there's a reason, I believe, behind why this happens every so often. The original tasers, when they came out, were more rectangular shaped, and they were operated with a button on the side. But the modern tasers that all the police departments have switched to now are actually shaped like a pistol grip with a trigger housing. They literally feel the same as a gun. They're about the same weight. They have about the same balance. And they function essentially the same way. You put your hand on the grip, you point, you put your finger on the trigger and pull. And when you're in the dynamic world of being in the middle of hand-to-hand combat with somebody, it is really easy to mistake what you're grabbing. And you have to understand something, too. The way the officers are trained, most police departments and their defense tactics use what's called a reaction hand, weapon hand type of concept, where all the weapons, let's say they're right-handed, as most people are, if you're a right-handed officer, all their weapons would be on the right side of their belt, their pepper spray, their, whether it's a PR-24 baton or an AS tactical baton, your handgun. If you've got a taser, that taser's going to be there because that's your weapon. That's your weapon hand, and that's where you're going to go to quickly access those. Meanwhile, on the left-hand side, they have the things like extra magazines, handcuffs, a latex glove pouch, things like that. And they use that left hand as their control hand or reaction hand. That's what they use to create distance between them and the suspect. They may push them back with their left hand while reaching for the appropriate weapon to subdue them with. And so now we're in a situation where we know someone's fighting, and we've taught them to go to their right side to grab a weapon. And somewhere along the line, it was a genius idea to put a gun and a taser that both have an almost identical feeling to each other right next to each other. I know some departments use a cross draw method for the taser to avoid that situation. But I feel like this incident really highlights the need to get away from gun shaped tasers and stop carrying them on the weapon side. They need to move those to the reaction side. They need to go back to the old rectangular body design with the push-button activation so that you most definitely know and can feel immediately if you've grabbed the wrong thing. And that's my 2 cents on that.
All right. Well, It's certainly, you know, it's one of those cases again where people are, they use their emotions to judge, and they don't want to listen to evidence. They don't want to know the why, the how. They don't want to know the explanation. All they want to do is form an opinion based on their emotions. Well, I feel like this, or I feel like that. Well, listen, I've said this a million times. Just because you feel like something doesn't make it fact, doesn't make it true, doesn't make it anything. Your emotions, you need to keep them in check. You know, like with the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, you know, at first glance, when I first started like watching the media on it and what they were saying about it, I'm like, man, this kid is guilty as all get out. But once I started actually observing the trial, paying attention, reading the whys, the ifs, the whats, it became apparent to me that that was, in fact, self-defense. With this case, I didn't get a chance to watch the trial as much as I did the Rittenhouse trial. I did read some up on it, and I do know that I believe she was an officer for 27-plus years. And in 27-plus years, I think they said that she drew her service weapon once or not at all in those 27 years. So if I'm on the outside looking in, which I am, my first point of logic, my view would be she's never even barely drawn her service weapon before. So when she says that this is a mistake, it quite possibly could be a mistake. So, but here we go again. It's racial divide. It's a white cop shooting a black kid. The one side of the community wants to call it racism. The other side of the community wants to say, you know what, if you would have just listened when he was pulled over, the cops pulled him over for a legitimate reason, found out this, found out that. And similar to the Waukesha, Wisconsin, that started the riots in Waukesha, when they pulled that guy over that happened to be black and he was shot in the back, he actually ended up making it living. But he ran to his vehicle in a similar fashion that Dante Wright did and was trying to retrieve what they believe was a knife. But they don't want to take accountability for their actions. You know, I've seen a million people get pulled over, and the first thing they do is put their hands at 10 and 2 on the steering wheel. And the cop comes up to the window. Whether you have a warrant out for you or not, they figure that out very relatively quickly. They ask you for your driver's license or your registration or what proof of insurance or whatever it may be in that state. And you comply, and you listen to what the officer asks of you. You are by no means required to answer any questions that they ask you. You don't have to. That is your right. But the better chances of you walking away or driving away from a traffic stop or any encounter with a police officer is just to cooperate. Now, I'm not saying that in 100% of the cases that's the correct way to handle things. Depends on the situation you're in. Again, when you try to break free from a police officer and try to run, right then and there as a police officer, you're admitting guilt to me as a police officer, saying, oh, well, why is he trying to run away from me? What is he going in his car for? Is he going to grab a gun? Is he going to grab a knife? You don't know. So that's just my opinion on it. I don't claim to be I have the world's most knowledge, because I don't. There's a lot I need to learn and have to learn. But I do look at things from a different angle, and I try to be the devil's advocate sometimes. And what's interesting about this, though, is, you know, there's a report that I'm going to go right into this story, okay? A report about the 20 U.S. major U.S. cities where crime, violent crime, has spiked drastically. We all know Chicago is one of them. Minneapolis and St. Paul is actually, it's absolutely horrible. It's 20 major U.S. cities. Portland, Oregon. Oregon. I can go right on down the line. But I'm not going to get into that part of it. What I am going to get into is the Democratic Party that are supporting to defund the police. And it's ironic this week that two Democrats who supported defunding the police were carjacked at gunpoint within 24 hours of each other in different U.S. cities that have a high spike in violent crimes. One of those was Illinois State Senator Kimberly Lightford. She's a Democrat out of Maywood. She was targeted in suburban Chicago on Tuesday night. And the other one is Congresswoman Mary Gay Scanlon, a Democrat out of Pennsylvania. She was carjacked Wednesday afternoon after an event in South Philly. Lightford was driving with her husband, Eric McKinney, in Broadview at about 9:45 p.m. when three masked suspects in a Durango SUV hijacked the couple's black Mercedes. Police said multiple gunshots were fired during the incident, but Lightford and her husband weren't physically hurt. So they did shoot at her husband. He was the driver of the vehicle. But what I find ironic about this is two Democratic politicians that support the defund the police agenda, both being violently carjacked at gunpoint. And I would really like to know what's going on in their head today. If they really still believe that agenda, do they really believe that? Or are these just good kids and they made a bad decision? Is that their attitude? I'd really like to know that, because we've been screaming this from the mountaintops. We've been sounding the alarm since this whole agenda came out. It's racism. It's racist. It's all racist. Cops are all racist. Not once have they sat in a squad car and went out on a domestic or a robbery call or a murder call. Not once. Not one of these politicians. They're driving around in Mercedes-Benz, and they are legislating you and me and America with their leftist, extreme leftist agenda. And defunding the police, they believe, is going to be the end-all, be-all to our problems. So basically what you're telling a criminal is like, you're right. They were too hard on you for doing what you did. You just made a bad decision that night when you shot so-and-so in the arm because you wanted to take their car. Well, guess what? You people are scum, because my brother lives in St. Paul. He was at his job. He delivers pizzas, and he was delivering pizzas to a normal customer, and a car pulled up next to him. He looked over to at him. They locked eyes. Didn't think nothing of it. He got out of his vehicle. The guy was standing on the curb waiting to receive his pizza. My brother walked up to him, and those guys jumped out of that SUV, jumped in my brother's car, and were just about to take off. My brother went to step in front of the car, which was a no-no when somebody's carjacking you. You don't try to stop them when you're already out of the car and they're already in position of the car. But it was his honest reaction. He stepped in front of that car, and they drug him down the road for a good while before he finally flew off, and skinned himself up pretty good. He's lucky he didn't get ran over, because they would have. When people are in that mode, carjackers or criminals, they're not worried about preserving your life. They're worried about getting away with their crime without getting caught. And it damn near cost my brother his life because of his reaction to the matter. He's certainly not at fault by any means, and I'm not saying that, but this is what happens when you defund the police. The police department in Minneapolis, St. Paul area, are basically, they're being ran by these extreme leftist Democrats in power. It starts with Governor Walz. It goes down to the mayor of St. Paul and the Minnesota DA, whose son is, Commissioner on Minneapolis. Or is he? He's not Minneapolis mayor. I don't know. He's involved in politics in Minneapolis. But you have a whole group of them up there that are supporting this, and you have a whole political party that is supporting this also, with their attitude that everything is racist. And I'm sorry, but it's not. Not everything is racist. It's called taking accountability for your own actions. And if you can't raise your children right and teach them that, then you're part of the problem too, in my opinion. And I don't care if you don't like that opinion, but that's a fact. And there's one thing that I thought of that really made sense to me, and it probably makes sense to a lot of you, but I am going to get called every name in the book for sharing this opinion. And again, I don't care, but I thought about something about, first of all, statistics. Trust me, I've looked up the statistics. I know the statistics. It's all there. Statistically, violent crime is committed by black males in this country. That is the true statistics. I'm not trying to say that to, point my finger at anybody, but that's what statistics tell me. Okay? Let's get to the root cause of why is that. And my thought process went to, you do realize, statistically speaking also, that the black family is, okay, before I get to that point, we do realize that when our black friends in the inner cities or anywhere are pulled over by police officers, they have an issue with authority involving police. Now, I'm not saying that some of their issues aren't justified or some of their beliefs or thoughts or feelings aren't justified, but it can't be 100% of the time. You can't hate every cop just because one cop treated you bad. You know what I'm saying on that? So they don't like authority, and the left and some of these criminals, they obviously don't want to take accountability for their own actions. And it all boils down to the black family, where they have an absent father, where the mom is working three jobs, trying to raise three, four kids, and she's doing the best she can. And she's trying to act as mom and dad and head of the household. And let me just tell you something. I've witnessed some of these black women that are raising these kids by themselves, and I'm going to be the first one to tell you, these are probably some of the strongest women that you'll ever come across in life. They are mentally strong. They are emotionally strong. They are physically strong. They are the epitome of strong. They are strong. But what's a sad fact is that these fathers are ducking out on their families and their responsibility as a father to teach their sons and daughters the right and the wrong way. Not to hate the police, but to cooperate when you're asked to cooperate in a kind and respectful manner. Now, I know I'm not saying that it happens 100% of the time, because I know I've seen some of these cops that come up with an attitude. They had a bad day, or maybe they're just assholes. I don't know. But that's certainly not all of them. So if they're treating you with respect, the least you can do is show a little bit of respect back and cooperate as much as you feel comfortable cooperating with under your rights. But you cannot blame every single problem that you or a certain race has because it's the police. No, it's because your attitudes of not wanting to take responsibility and accountability for your own actions. Do we have a problem in the police departments with overzealous police officers? There are some. There are. Just like in every walks of life, you can go to any profession and you're going to find some of the nicest people and you're going to find the biggest assholes. And that's any profession. And yes, police officers are supposed to be professionals, right? Well, we're all supposed to be professionals in some way or another, but the human is a human. We all have bad days. We all take it out on the wrong people. That's the bottom line. So I kind of get off on a rant there, but that's my thoughts on it. And it's going to be the unpopular opinion amongst many people. They're going to call me a racist, and they're going to call me this, and they're going to call me that. But the bottom line is I love everybody, and I'll be kind to anybody and everybody. But we have to be realistic with the logic here and call a spade a spade. As statistics prove it, and they show it over and over in our history. So what did you want to add to that, Chris, about, these two politicians that got robbed at gunpoint, one from Illinois and one from Pennsylvania, that support the Defund the Police movement?
Well,
I think if you were to ask them what they think of it, I think they would probably tell you that if Joe Manchin had just voted for Build Back Better, it wouldn't have happened. But on a more serious note, kind of going back to your talk about statistics, with the higher crime rates within the black community. Let me ask you something, Jeremy. I want you to imagine for a second. Now, you're a conservative. You're seen as conservative. You're on the wrong side of the political fence for the current trend. Your position on a few things, you know, they're trying to pass some things that may make it that you can't work if you don't go along with their program. If you suddenly found yourself where you could not feed your family, if you could not work, if they came in and they cut off all your sources of income, right, what would you do? Mm-hmm. How would you feed yourself? How would you feed your family?
If they cut off all my sources of income.
Yeah. You just cannot get a job. You open a business. You can't run a business. They just take away your all your ability to earn income. What would you do?
That's funny. It's funny you ask that question. You know why it's funny you ask me that question? Because many years ago, I was a young man that made a lot of mistakes. And I happened to plead guilty to felony assault many years ago. And after I pled guilty, I paid my fines, my restitution. I did what was asked of me by the courts. I followed every rule that they told me to follow. And I completed that program and I was done. But that's just the beginning of it. What happened to me after I pled guilty to a felony assault, which, by the way, my plea agreement was if I pled guilty, paid the restitution and fines, they would drop it to a gross misdemeanor. That's what I did. Anyway, so what happened to me after that? I applied. I didn't have a job. I lost my job. I applied at, I don't know, how many places. I'm going to guess upwards of 100. And nobody, and I mean when I say nobody, would hire me because I put that I was a convicted felon on that application. I didn't have a trade school, any experience in that. There's certain things I knew how to do, and I was a jack of all trades and a master of none. But I ended up getting a job at a trucking company, part-time on the weekends, washing tankers out. There was one guy that decided that he was going to give me a chance. He needed some help. And he really didn't care that I had a felony. We talked about it, but he didn't care. I did what I had to do to survive. I was fortunate enough to have parents that supported me and helped me a little bit, you know. But I know that not a lot of people have the same opportunities I do or support that I do. But I did what I had to do to work myself into a better position. Well, I worked 6 months part-time on the weekends because nobody else would hire me. I couldn't get a full-time job. I scraped by. And after that 6 months, I showed him that I was worthy. And you know what he did? He offered me a position in his shop, put me on full-time and salary. And that's how I got back on my feet. I got my ass up off the chair. I didn't make excuses for myself. And I went out and I worked my ass off and proved that I was worth it. That's what you do. Maybe that. I hope that answered your question, Chris.
Okay. So you had parents that were in a position to help. I want you, in this particular scenario I'm throwing at your parents, because they hold the same beliefs and the same cultural background as you. They're prohibited from working. Your siblings, your friends, everyone in your community. Unable to get jobs because of, let's say, your political beliefs, right? Or your religious beliefs or something. What would you do? Are you going to starve? Or are you going to let your kids starve? Your family, you're going to let them starve? What would you be willing to resort to if there was no legal way for you to go out and earn income?
You figure it out, bro. You walk to the next town if you have to. If you're asking if I would resort to stealing and being a criminal, absolutely not. No. I mean, I live out in the middle of rural Minnesota, and the closest town is 5 miles. If I had to walk 5 miles because I guaranteed a job out there, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to figure it out. But you can't sit back and blame the world on all your frickin' problems if you're unwilling to get up and do something for yourself. I'm probably not going to give you the answer that you like. I'm going to say it, repeat it over and over again, because I've been in a situation where I couldn't get a job. But I figured it out. I worked odd jobs. I worked cash jobs. Whatever I could do to get money that wasn't illegal, that's what I did.
Okay. Well, the point I'm getting at, imagine that you're black and the year is, let's say, 1948.
But it's not 1948. It's 2021.
I'm talking about my scenario.
But your scenario is unrealistic, Chris, because you're going back to history. It's just like going back and saying, I'm responsible for slavery. I'm not responsible for slavery. I'm responsible for Jeremy Johnson.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. So, to finish trying to get to the point, let's say the year's 1948, you're black, no one will hire you. No one will give you a job. Welfare's not a thing, right? You have no means, you have no legal means of getting food. You have no legal means of income. There's a few people out there that will hire someone of color, but overwhelmingly there's not enough of people willing to do that to cover the number of people who need jobs. And so what do you end up with? How do people take care of themselves when they're starving and they have no other means? A lot of times they resort to criminal activity. Now, there's one way that you can go into business. It doesn't require a business license. That's the movement of things that are illegal. You start to develop a culture where people do illegal things to fund themselves because they are being cut out from legal means of earning income by people who are doing just fine in life. And so you create a community where people are mistrusting of police and are willing to engage in illegal activity to stay alive, because people are cutting them out from having their own means of supporting themselves, so that they turn. You now begin to create a culture, and it gets passed from one generation to the next generation. You only have to go back one generation. I remember I was talking with one of my pilot car operators on an oversized load here a few months ago, and he was talking about growing up in the 1980s, and this will destroy one of the liberal narratives. He grew up in Chicago, but the unions would not hire a black man. So he was an electrician. He had learned to be an electrician. He actually had to move to Texas to get a job as an electrician because the unions wouldn't hire him. But we're only talking one generation back to where, on the large scale, people who were black could not work a legal job. And there were cultures that turned to there were a lot of people in that culture that did turn to illegal means of raising revenue in large numbers.
But that was yesterday, Chris. Again, we're at today now. We got to quit making excuses for what happened in the past and get on with what's going on today. I see help wanted signs at every corner across this country. The problem is people don't want to work. They don't want to work for the – they think they should make $250,000 a year with no ability to do anything. They have no skills. You start from the bottom and you work your way up. That's how it works. That's how I did it. That's how you did it. That's how everybody does it. This constant excuse of why I just live in a bad part of town. I could never get up. You know what? You can't get up because you're not going to McDonald's and working 50 hours a week. As much as you can, save up a little bit of money and better yourself. Obtain some skills, customer service, whatever it is that you can at McDonald's. I don't care where you start, but do it. But they don't. They sit on their ass because they're making more money selling drugs or stealing other people's stuff. And I'm tired of it. I'm one American that is tired of it. So there's my rant.
I was just pointing out statistically why you've got the higher level. You mentioned that we probably need to figure out what's at the root of that, you know, and you probably heard the saying, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. I'd be willing to bet a lot of the values and morals that you hold are probably very similar to your parents and your grandparents. So if you've got people who've been raised in communities where their parents and their grandparents had to resort to illegal means of revenue, then it's not going to be surprising that even though the much better opportunity exists now than in their time, it's not going to be surprising that you still see remnants of that family history present in larger numbers in their community than in others. And
listen, Chris, I understand. I understand that we have to break some chains here somewhere along the line. I get that. I understand. I'm not a dummy. I am a realist. I get that there are some things that have happened over the years that have put certain people at a disadvantage. But there's also that mindset of I watch Hollywood, I watch Kardashians, and they get enough social media followers and they get rich. The mindset of today's youth are, well, if I get TikTok famous or whatever, I can make money. And some of them actually do go out and actually make money, but they think that that's the way to get rich fast. I don't have to work. See, I can just do this. Us Midwesterners, We come from families of backbreaking hard work where we have a work ethic, and we know that we have to start from the ground up. Are we afforded some opportunities that other people aren't? I would say in the Midwest, if you have a good work ethic, I would say that you do. However, the people around my community, I listen, I'm not a black man either. I don't know how they have perceived going in for a job interview, kind of maybe they're perceived just like I did when I had my felony on my record. But if you're truly trying to better yourself, you truly want to do something, don't give up just because 5 people said no or 100 people said no. You keep on fighting until that one person says, you know what, I'm going to give you a chance. And prove them wrong. Prove the system wrong and prove yourself wrong. Show everybody what they've been missing out on, and just go and persevere. I've seen a lot of different black men, Hispanic men, all races and all genders that went out with a chip on their shoulders to show everybody, this is who I am and this is what, you know, you've been missing out on. And they have turned out to be the most fantastic workers that you've ever seen. They're good people. They're hard worker. They got a good work ethic. And then I've seen that the whole entitled, I'm going to go out and you're going to give me everything without me having to do any work. Well, that's not how it works, buddy. So, but hey, I see we got somebody on the line here. I haven't went through. Are you on the switchboard yet, Chris?
Not back home, but I haven't yet.
What's that?
No, I said I am at home now. I just got home, but I have not set up the computer.
Oh, okay. We're going to go to a caller here. If you're listening in on the show and you want to call in and share your opinion, agree, disagree, all we ask is that you keep it respectful. You have every right to have a differing opinion than me and Chris, and as long as you're respectful about it. I'm not going to call you names. Don't call me names. And if you do, I'm just going to cut the phone off. I don't handle disrespect very well. The phone number to call in is 516-387-1733, 516-387-1733. Once you get on, get through, all you got to do is press the number one. That'll give me the signal that you want to talk. And I do have a listener on right now that wants to share their opinion. And I will bring you on right now. If your phone number ends with 9687, you're on the air. What would you like to add? And who do we got on the phone tonight?
We got the medicine man. What are you doing, Chris?
Medicine man, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm not doing too bad. Chris, you make her home?
I made it home. I've been home, and Chris made it home. Yeah.
Well, good deal. Good deal. I guess.
So what would you like to add to this conversation?
Where we're at with what's being said to this point, I do agree with Chris. The fact that, you pretty much create the scenario. And I think they were kind of pushed in that scenario to a point. But ultimately, the question that Chris asked you, if you were pushed out and there was nowhere to make a dollar, you could not physically get a job. There's always a way. Just like you said, you go out there and you start at the bottom, work your way to the top. You work your ass off and you get to the top, no matter what it is. McDonald's, scrubbing tankers, working at Blue Beacon. Find something to do. If it's to the point where it's financial gain and they completely scrub you from that, you find a way to feed your family, no matter what. I came out of Ohio. I moved out to Idaho, and I'm to the point now with watching what's going on in our nation. The fact that these vaccines, this, that, and the other, are going to try to push people out of jobs, which is successfully doing, whether it be city by city, state by state, however they're doing it, with their mandate bullcrap, I'm set up in a spot where money's really not a big deal. I'll go out and I'll feed my family. I'll take care of mine. As far as getting a job, I'll get a job. I was a contractor at a young age, age of 7. I grew up with my father, the hardest working man that I know. I was raised and taught, you go get what you want, you make what you want, you show your worth, and you get it. You show it by proof. Sweat off your brow. Work your ass off. And I've done that through 2 professions now. I was a general contractor for years, and now I'm a professional truck driver. Own my own truck, do oversized heavy haul. That's my profession now. As far as getting into the racial side of things, I'm not a black man either. My dad was a very, very, very racist individual early on. He now operates a 1 million square foot facility, a warehouse complex, as a matter of fact. That's a 1 million square foot, 66-foot property. And some of the hardest working individuals that he could find were black men. The most decent people you could ever deal with. Hard workers, I'm racist to a point when it comes to lazy and self-entitled. And that racist situation on my end stems to all races and creeds. I don't care if you're yellow, yellow, green, purple, brown. I don't care. If you're a lazy, self-entitled piece of crap, I want nothing to do with you. But those individuals that I was raised with, they were amazing people. Anthony and a handful of them, just great guys. Breaking it down to the fact that if there's no monetary value, and as far as the job comes down to, there's always a way. There's always a way. Work your ass off, and they flat out cut you out. I guess I'm pushing more to this point that you're gonna have papers, please, to go to the grocery store. There's always a way. I guess that's where I'm pointing more towards getting out of the racial divide, and talking on that end. Put yourself in a spot where if you need food, you're gonna get food regardless. string of disease.
Well, right. It's all about life choices.
Yeah.
It's all about life choices.
It comes down to it. Yep.
Yep. No, that's exactly right. But, I appreciate you calling in, Medicine Man. What's that?
No, I was just saying, go out there and work your ass off. If they say you can't work there,
exactly.
Find somewhere else. Continue.
Yeah.
Don't stop.
And
do not fall
that's
into
exactly
this
right.
whole
that's exactly
Obama
what
era
I did.
Crap that was going on back then, which, I mean, in my opinion, Obama literally pushed the whole gimme state. But you can push it back to Bill Clinton, but the real big push for welfare state was Obama, in my opinion.
Well, I want to tell you something. When you let the government dictate who can work and who can't work, and the whole feel sorry for that one group of people, but don't feel sorry for that one group of people, and we're just going to give you free money to live, and you don't worry about working, it completely ruins the work ethic. It completely ruins the wheels of our economic system, because you start putting a steel bar in those metal wheels that are turning, and you're stopping that whole machine because once you do that, the government is in complete control. They completely control your life. Do you think they're going to give you a $5,000 a month for the rest of your life? No, once they have everybody on board and they're living comfortably and like, oh, yeah, I'm getting $5,000 a month. I don't have to work. I do whatever I want. As soon as everybody's on board and there is no system left where you can go get a job, you know what they do? They cut you down to $1,000 a month. Well, I'm just saying. I'm just using that as an example.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is they give you a bunch of money to begin with and make everybody comfortable and see, this is a great system. And then as soon as everybody's on board, you have no other options. They yank the rug from underneath you and they start giving you $500 a month. And then they say, well, that's the way it is now. But now you've already given up your freedoms and all of that. Now you're stuck with $500. You have no other options. Yeah, it's too late. That's why we fight the way we do now.
I was going to ask you a question. Why do you think they want that? You already answered it. That's what they want.
Well, I mean, absolutely, that's what they want. Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
You know,
once they have complete control, guess what? That's it. You guys don't get no choices. You don't get to vote. You don't get to do any. You lose your freedoms once we allow them to be in complete control. That is not what our forefathers and the Constitution was set up for. It was for the government to dictate your every move and how you live your life. That was not what that was for.
That almost resembles something of like, what? Where do we stand right now? Basically 1936 Nazi Germany, right about this point in time, 1936, 37, where we stand?
Yeah, the wheels are in motion.
Yeah, I will.
The wheels are in motion.
I will stand on this hill. If you want to take my job and say that I have to be jabbed, so on and so forth, as far as going, you know, forth with my CDL career, I will eat and I will take care of my family. If you want to continue
absolutely
to push,
same here.
Then things get really nasty. So,
no, yeah, and that's there's
that's
a lot of us out there
argument
like that.
Yep. So, but yeah.
Yeah.
I appreciate it,
Medicine Man.
And you guys have a good evening. I'm going to continue listening.
Yeah,
there's something else to jump in on.
Yeah.
I'm trying to diffuse the
you
whole
have a good night
situation
too, brother. Yeah, right.
Good night, Jim.
All right, man. Take care.
All right, brother.
All right. That was Medicine Man, everybody. He's a regular caller into the show, a friend of Chris's, a friend of the show, so let's put it that way. I've talked to him numerous times. He seems like a pretty good feller. Down to earth, a hard worker, and that's what it's all about in my humble opinion. And here's where I'm going to go with something. I just kind of touched on it with when the government takes our jobs and we rely on the government for our daily needs. It doesn't end well. The OSHA mandate coming up goes into effect in February. The 5th District Court of Appeals, I believe, right? They shot that mandate down, and now the 6th District come into play and overruled that, and now the mandate's back on. And that mandate is any employer that has 100 or more employers has to, is mandated to tell all of their workers that they have to be vaccinated with this shot. And the Supreme Court is going to hear a case for the truck drivers, I believe, on January 7th. And the Supreme Court's going to decide whether or not it's legal for the federal government to issue these kind of mandates. And like I told Chris earlier, I said this is going to be the beginning or the end of these mandates. Whatever that decision is, if the Supreme Court shoots this down for the truckers, then the rest of the mandates, it's over with. And I think a lot of us will breathe a sigh of relief. If they go ahead with this, we're in for some very tough times in the very near future. And kind of coinciding with that mandate, on January 5th, the New York State legislation are going to be voting on numerous things. And one of those things is to let the governor of New York State have complete control and put people that they deem a health risk for the general public, they can put them in detention camps for as long as they feel like it, and that is left to the discretion of the governor. So the governor will hire these healthcare professional teams, quote-unquote, whatever you want to call it, and they will enforce whatever the governor tells them to enforce. Now, Medicine Man touched on something. Where are we at? 1934, 1935, 1936? Similar to that. Remember, when the Nuremberg trials happened after Nazi Germany, they asked the soldiers, the SS soldiers and doctors, why did you do this? And their answer was, I was just following orders. At some point in time, ladies and gentlemen, and this goes to every single American out there, you've got to quit following orders and do what's right. And by following these tyrants' orders, you are being complacent in crimes against humanity. And me and Chris kind of got some big news. Now, we're still working on double verifying this, okay? But I took it upon myself to email. I came across a story of the international courts being petitioned by an attorney that is suing Fauci, Bill Gates, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and numerous others for crimes against humanity on the violation of the Nuremberg Code. And I emailed this lawyer, the attorney that filed in the international courts. And this is, I haven't been able to verify her yet. I'm just telling you, so don't take this to the bank. This is just, I'm telling you what the process is that I went through, okay? I cannot validate this 100% yet. I'm not comfortable doing that. I'm just telling you what happened. So I emailed this supposed attorney that has filed this in international courts, and I said, can you verify if this is really true, that you did petition the international courts to charge these people with crimes against humanity? And she emailed me back. She goes, yes, it is verified. It is absolutely true. Okay. This isn't a fresh stages here. I don't like to usually tell people about stuff that I cannot validate 100%. I'm just going to share again with the process I'm going through to validate this whole thing. Chris, why don't you go ahead and tell the audience, before you do, anybody that's listening, you can call in our guest call-in number at 516-387-1733. That's 516-387-1733. And when you call in, you get connected. And if you want to be on the air, just go ahead and press the number 1, and that will get you on the air with us. It'll show that you want to share your opinion, and you are welcome to share your opinion. All we ask is you keep it respectful. Even if it's in disagreement with our opinions, you're welcome to have your opinion. So that's the number. But, Chris, go ahead and tell them what you did and what you found out involving this international court case.
Okay, so it at least appears the petition's been filed with the International Criminal Court. That is the world court. That is the court that holds people accountable for war crimes, amongst other things, other human rights violations. And this court essentially was established for the Nuremberg trials that I think most of our listeners, if not all of our listeners, know what we're talking about there. And so I'm just going to read some of the things from the complaint. What we have is a copy, a file of the criminal complaint. It's 46 pages. It's in PDF format. It does include the email address for the ICC, the International Criminal Court. I have contacted them by email, not gotten a response yet. I've also contacted the courts by phone, spoke with someone out there. Unfortunately, what I was told was that they do not have access to any of that, and that only the information desk responds, and they do it via the email address, and that it's probably going to be a while before anyone gets back to me to verify the existence of this petition. So we have to go with what we have right now is the attorney, Hannah Rose, I believe is the attorney's name. And that's, of course, who you emailed for verification. And we did get that verification from her that, yes, I'm the attorney, and this has been filed with the ICC. What the complaint lays out are violations of the Nuremberg Code, violation of Article 6 of the Rome Statute, Article 7 of the Rome Statute, Article 8 of the Rome Statute, and Article 8 looks like maybe BIS 3. I don't know if that's like a subsection 3 of the Rome Statute. Perpetrators named: Prime Minister for the UK, Boris Johnson, Chief Medical Officer for England, Chief Medical Advisor to the UK government, Christopher Whitty, former Secretary of State for Health and Social Care, Matthew Hancock, Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, June Rain, Director General of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, I'm probably butchering that name. We also had the co-chair of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, William Gates III, you know him as Bill, co-chair of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Melinda Gates, chairman and chief executive officer of Pfizer, Albert Bourla, chief executive officer of AstraZeneca, Stephanie Bansal, chief executive officer of Moderna, Pascal Thuria. Let's see, Johnson & Johnson chief, Alex Gorsky, president of the Rockefeller Foundation, Dr. Rajiv Shah, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, the NAIAD, Dr. Anthony Fauci. They failed to refer to him as Lord Fauci. That might upset him. Founder and executive chairman of the World Economic Forum, the WEF, Klaus Schwab, as well as president of EcoHealth Alliance, Dr. Peter Daszak. They list as victims here because the U.S. is not a participant in the ICC. So they list as victim the people of the United Kingdom. So you got your applicant, Hannah Rose, is the lawyer and human rights activist who filed, along with Dr. Mike Yeadon, a qualified life science researcher with a degree in biochemistry and toxicology and research-based PhD in respiratory pharmacology. Of particular note, he's also the former vice president and chief scientist of allergy and respiratory research for Pfizer. Now, that's very interesting. Chief scientist, not just one of the low-level, you know, lab coats in there. He was the chief scientist and vice president over respiratory pharmacology. That includes all pharmaceuticals, whether they're a therapeutic or whether you're talking vaccine development, for respiratory illnesses, which would include, of course, SARS-CoV-2. I think maybe this guy might know what he's talking about, being that he was the chief scientist over the research department for respiratory illnesses of the largest pharmaceutical in the largest pharmaceutical company in the world. Now, of course, if you read his bio on the internet, all the things that you get immediately is a bunch of articles discrediting him, as they admit his former position, but say that, you know, he started repeating COVID conspiracy theories in 2020. So what they want you to believe is that this man was spending his entire adult career researching and developing vaccines and therapeutic treatments for respiratory viruses and illnesses, and that he was perfectly knowledgeable in creating these things for the world, perfectly professional, perfectly competent for all those years. And it was only in 2020 when he disagreed with Don Lemon on CNN that suddenly he was clearly psychotic. So anyway, he's one of the key applicants on this. You've also got, Piers Corbin, astrophysicist and activist. Mark Sexton, retired police officer. John O'Looney, funeral director and activist. John McStay, another activist. And Louise Schottbolt, nurse and human rights activist. And essentially, without going into all the long, drawn-out legal jargon contained in this, essentially what they are indicating is that there was conspiracy that existed, collaboration between Dr. Fauci, Bill and Melinda Gates, the World Health Organization, the CDC, the pharmaceutical companies involved in the manufacturer. He alleges that the statistics on the COVID cases and fatalities were exaggerated, miscounted intentionally to create a public panic, and that they furthermore went into the lockdowns in order to grab grab power, create a totalitarian state. And of course, I think we all know, at least those of us who pay attention, that the pharmaceutical companies that got awarded the approval for the experimental, or I should say the experimental use authorizations for the vaccines that they're selling, which are not vaccines. Yeadon addresses that in the complaint as well, that they are not traditional vaccines. They are, in fact, mRNAs, which is gene therapy. But the companies that put those on the market, of course, are turning record profits. I don't know. I mean, the more you dig into this, essentially what they're saying is this conspiracy happened. There were multiple violations of the Nuremberg Code, specifically informed consent, and the fact that experimental drugs cannot be forced onto unwilling participants, which, of course, is not what we've been seeing worldwide. We've been seeing the opposite. We've been seeing mandatory use of experimental use authorization drugs that has resulted in death and permanent disability, along with other injuries, which constitutes human rights violations. And they're trying to stop this. They're trying to stop this train.
What is that doctor's name? I believe he's out of Germany. Is it Fulnick?
The doctor.
It was Corbin. Basically, the Fulnick doctor, he was the one that started sounding the alarms. And then Michael Yeadon, who used to be the vice president of Pfizer, left Pfizer and has been trying to sound the alarm. And the media, Pfizer, the pharmaceutical companies, the government, just like they do with anybody that is they deem a threat to what their agenda is, they call him crazy. They try to discredit him at all costs. I've watched a lot of Yeadon's videos, and it certainly makes sense to me with everything that I've researched and found with these vaccine injuries. Vaccine deaths, I don't even think we're even getting if I think if we really knew the full numbers, the actual real numbers, people would be up in arms. It'd probably be pitchforks and burning crosses at the White House. I mean, that's how pissed off people would be if they really knew the full numbers. Now, I have also heard people call me a dipshit and call me a conspiracy theorist and all that, and it's because they don't read it, anything other than headline news. CNN ain't reporting it, or Fox News ain't reporting it, or NBC. They don't get beyond that. You have to dig deep for a lot of this stuff, and some of it comes off as so out there. Like, you look at it and it's like, there's no way that could be true. I mean, how could they get by with this? Ladies and gentlemen, they've set up a system worldwide. They've got people in place worldwide that are all working together. It goes right back to the Bilderberg group that meet, what is it, every year? Is it every 2 years? And if you read who's attended those meetings, the Bilderberg group, it would knock your socks off. And if you found out exactly what they talk about at the Bilderberg group meetings, or whatever the hell they call it, that would give you chills down your spine. And when you see certain articles talking about Bill Gates, talking about world depopulation and, you know, to sustain a population, this isn't nothing new. This was talked about back in the late 30s in Nazi Germany by numerous people about sustaining the population of the world. You're dealing with some sick folks all over the world. This isn't isolated in America or Australia or Germany or Canada. This is all over the world. These people that have a lot of money, they have created a system that works for them. And meanwhile, while they're stealing the peasant's last penny to add to their pile of pennies, us peasants are over here fighting with each other while they're trying to keep us divided, or while they do keep us divided with certain social issues, racism, it goes right on down the line. And now you look at, especially like America, look at how divided we are. If you're a Republican, you're a dipshit. If you're a Democrat, you look at the Republicans, oh yeah, those guys are a cult. The Republicans are looking at the Democrats and say, yeah, those guys are a cult. Meanwhile, those are the people that watch the right or the left news, and there is a big chunk of America that they might lean toward one side or the other. They might call themselves Democrat, or they might call themselves Republican, but in actuality, they're American at the end of the day, and they stand in the middle, and they're looking at the right calling the left idiots, and they're looking at the left calling the right idiots, and that is what's dividing us, while these elites just steal our money and steal our system. So, man, it's stuff that we're working on behind the scenes, guys, that it would blow your mind if you read some of the stuff. And some of it we find out, like, it was – that sounds a little out there. And you start researching into it, and you get so far, and everything looks legit, and then all of a sudden, no, that's not quite as it seems. So, we try to tell you or talk about – things that we know to be true. And when we don't, we can't verify it, kind of like this national or universal court, international court, I'm sorry. We've only gotten one verification. So I wouldn't even feel comfortable to say there's any truth behind what we're talking about on this matter, except for that one verification. Now, we obviously have a lot of digging to do, and a lot of emails and a lot of phone calls and a lot of research to do to try to verify if this really is, in fact, true. So on this matter, all the names that Chris, like, mentioned, we're certainly not trying to slander anybody. We're just mentioning what we read in those 47 pages, Chris?
46.
Yeah. We're just telling you what we read in that. Me and Chris both have a copy, and our friend Tony does too. Hey, I see that we have another caller that wants to get on the line. If your number ends in 6630, I'm going to bring you on the line right now. And you are on the air. Who do we have speaking tonight?
You have Jay Thorpe. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
I have listened to you a few times, a handful of times. I just want to ask to start out, is Chris Billy Bikerson?
Yes.
No? Yes. Hey, Billy, it's Jay from West Virginia, when we had a few hours to talk, and thank you for your effort here.
Yes.
No? Okay. Anyways, I'm sure he remembers.
The
fact that you guys go as deep as you do, I really respect that and the work that it takes to do that, because most people will not be that. And you come out with whatever you come out with, and you try to give it away, and it's going to end up going over most people's heads. But, you know, thank you for going through the trouble and giving your time. And you really do hit a lot of nails right on the head. You know, it is sad that we are so divided. And, you know, if I could go around and, you know, spread some magic dust to go, hey, we're really the same. You know, get along with your neighbor and work on it. You know, I wish I could. Well, you guys, I've always said that lately in time that, you know, everyone seems to have the answer, but no one's coming up with the right questions. That's one of the reasons I'm taking my hat off to you right now. You guys are coming up with the right questions. So I'm going to, you know, let you continue, but I did want to call in, and at some point, you know, Billy had asked me to do that. So I've done it. Next time I'll call maybe with more of an opinion. But thank you for your work, and please continue.
Well, thank you for your call. We surely appreciate that. And anytime we have support, it helps us carry on with what we do. So we appreciate your call, sir, and you have a great night and a Merry Christmas.
You too.
Okay, that was Jay from, what do you see, West Virginia? I believe it was West Virginia.
No, he's from New England. He and I met
New
in
England.
West Virginia, I believe, while I was broke down. But, yeah, we actually met over there at the Rutten Box over there by the TA Wheeling, right there off of 70.
Oh, right on. Okay, yeah. So, I mean, it's always nice for us to hear from you guys, the listeners. Whether you're listening on the Internet or you're listening through your phone, we always love hearing from you. And whether you agree with us or you disagree with us, we've had people on here that disagree with us. And they keep it respectful, and we keep it respectful back to them. Nobody calls anybody idiots because they have different ideas or different opinions. But we always appreciate the calls. And if you want to get on and add your opinion or your thoughts, just dial the number. It's 516-387-1733. Just for those of you that didn't get that right away, grab your pen, grab your paper. Dial it in your phone right now. I'll say it one more time. It's 516-387-1733. And once you get through on that line, just press the number 1. And that'll let us know on a switchboard that you want to talk. And we'll put you on the air. We have no problem putting anybody on the air and sharing their opinion because everybody at the end of the day has a right to their opinion. So, but that's some of the stuff we're working on, everybody. You know, we don't claim to be geniuses or experts or any of that. What we claim is to be observers. Mainly, you know, I observe a lot of things. I get 100 messages a day from different people that send me down a different rabbit hole every day. I don't get to my messages every day. Sometimes it takes a week because I'm busy researching other stuff. But and Chris is the same way. And Chris's wife will send us stuff that she come across that's like, I didn't see that. Now I got another rabbit hole I got to, you know. It's never ending. But, yeah, it's just me and Chris talked, you know, we started the series with MENA, Arkansas. We wanted to get to, you know, the Iran-Contra scandal and a million other government programs that have happened throughout history to get to where you guys understand what is really going on in our country, or in our world, and with our governments. They're not as squeaky clean and loyal as everyone thought. Well, the Republicans are bad. Yeah. Well, the Democrats, they're our savior. We got to vote blue. That's the attitude that has gotten us into the mess that we're in right now. Vote red, vote blue. You know what? How about you vote for who the best candidate is, whether they're red or blue, whether they believe in the Constitution and your personal freedoms. That's the people you want to be voting in. Because you know what? The people that believe in the Constitution and your personal freedoms are going to be the ones less likely to try to strip them from you. So this party voting stuff has gotten us into a huge, huge mess. But, hey, who am I? I'm just a truck driver, right, Chris?
Exactly. We're just a couple of dumb truck drivers.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, we got a few minutes left. Do you want to touch on the Gary Webb thing tonight?
Yeah, we can get into Gary Webb.
Yeah, I mean, we got a good, even if we go over like 10 or 15 minutes, that ain't going to be so bad. You know, Gary Webb was a journalist. He broke a story about the Iran-Contra scandal. And he went, I believe it was Brazil. And how was it that he bribed his way in to the prison so he could talk to one of the drug kingpins? And what is the documentary that I had you had me watch, Chris, that the Gary Webb story?
The Gary Webb, well, there was the movie Kill the Messenger.
Yeah, that one. There you go.
The documentaries that are out there on Gary Webb, there aren't as many of them available now. They're all relatively short, 10, 15 minutes. I don't remember the names of them now. You know, that's been like 3 weeks ago that I sent those to you. But for those of you that weren't tuned into our show where we talked about MENA, Arkansas, we kind of did a little bit of an overview of the Iran-Contra scandal. And I just kind of want to go over that again before we jump into Gary Webb here. We got like 40 minutes left of the show, or like 38, something like that, 37. But so basically the U.S. did not want a communist pro-Soviet government in Central America. And that is what was happening in the little nation of Nicaragua. And so there were rebel forces there known as the Contras who were fighting against the Sandinista government of Nicaragua, who were the communists. And the Democrat, we had a split house at that time. You know, there was a Republican president, you know, Ronald Reagan. And then you had a Democrat-controlled Congress. And the Democrats decided they actually passed legislation. They passed an act that prevented the administration from giving material or financial assistance to the Contras. They didn't want us getting involved in another U.S. versus the communist conflict or war. So they kind of had their legs put out from underneath them, and so they did what government, especially our government, does best. They went into what they call black bag mode or covert operation and began secretly funding and assisting the Contras in Nicaragua. And the way they did that, as it turns out, without getting into too much detail here, more or less it ended up, there was an informant, CIA asset, by the name of Barry Seal. He was a pilot, a very talented pilot. Him and some of his guys who had at least one of his, one of the members of his flight crew had flown Air America missions out in Laos during the Vietnam War. That's another whole conspiracy there we can get into sometime. But they essentially trafficked cocaine for the Medellin cartel and transported guns, and there were some payoffs to Noriega out in Panama because they had to stop and refuel somewhere. And so Noriega agreed to turn a blind eye in exchange for some favors, of course. And that was getting done. Barry Seale and his men were getting extremely wealthy. I believe they were, I mean, they were making something like $2 million each time they flew a load of cocaine back over to the U.S. They had a drop zone. They had a couple of different drop zones that they used to drop the cocaine off in Louisiana outside of Baton Rouge. And in between Mena, Arkansas, and Little Rock, Arkansas, they had a field they used. And anyway, that's how they were funding the whole Iran-Contra thing. Well, Gary Webb was actually assigned to study the crack epidemic that was going on in Los Angeles in the 80s. And that's what he was digging into. And he started hearing crazy information on the streets. He had people telling him that they were getting cocaine, that Los Angeles was getting cocaine from the United States government, which, of course, he found unbelievable. I don't think he believed it at first. But the more he started digging into his story, where he was looking for the root causes of that, you know, where all this cocaine was suddenly coming from, why was there so much of it, why was it running the streets of Los Angeles rampant, that's when he started getting pointed in the right directions. And he got pointed to a guy by the name of Freeway Rick Ross, who was alive and well and no longer in prison. But Rick Ross was essentially getting cocaine through a contact from the Contras in Nicaragua. The Contras had sent a smuggler up who was basically after the Medellin cartel's cocaine flew into Mena, Arkansas. This guy, and you have to forgive me, I didn't think we were going to end up getting to this tonight, so I didn't research his name again before the show, but he was an agent, a smuggler for the Contras. He was here to raise money for them. He was picking up the cocaine out of Mena and was trafficking it to Freeway Rick Ross out in Los Angeles, who became a drug kingpin of Los Angeles almost overnight, because he was getting huge amounts of cocaine at a heavily discounted rate through this contact who was getting the cocaine from basically one of our CIA assets that was flying it illegally to raise money. So they, in turn, were taking the money from the cocaine cells, and they were using that to fund operations for the Contras down in Nicaragua. And that is what Gary Webb stumbled into. And the more he dug in, the more information he got, he actually ended up going down into Nicaragua, where he was able to have an interview in the prison with one of the players in that smuggling operation. Again, I don't remember his name. If I had researched it right before the show, I'd remember. But he got more information from him. He also had a contact over in Washington, D.C. from the U.S. intelligence community, who wouldn't give him anything on the record, but off the record was pointing him in the right direction that he needed to go to uncover what was happening. And he put all this together, and he ran the first story about how we had this fallout from the Iran-Contra scandal. Iran got dragged into it at some point after Barry Seale. Barry Seale was terminated by the Medellin cartel when they found out that he was working informant for the DEA. They had him murdered out in Louisiana. But so after that, of course, they shifted things and started funneling money through Iran, and that's how it became known as Iran-Contra. All that aside, when Gary ran that story, what really made the story take off was the fact that the internet was a new thing. And so their newspaper was locally circulated, but was one of the first big stories to actually be available on the internet. And so it was one of the first viral sensations in news media, because all of a sudden people in Cleveland and New York and Dallas could go on the internet and read a story from this local newspaper out in California, which it, of course, wasn't possible prior to that. So it became a big news sensation. It caused a lot of political waves for then President Bill Clinton. Huge story, lots of traction, which also brought a whole lot of pressure from government sources to the newspaper to shut that story down. It was meant to be a series. The first story that broke was just a summary, and he was continuing to give additional information, additional events that had occurred, additional witness information, witness accounts, I should say. And eventually the newspaper shut him down. And when the newspaper shut him down and told him he could not write about it anymore, he ended up writing a book instead. He wrote a book. He went on a book tour. And this was in 2004. While he was on the book tour, which some different accounts, some people say it was a successful book tour, some people say it was not a successful book tour. Either way, I guess he became pretty despondent about his position in life, and he committed suicide in his hotel room by shooting himself in the head twice. And I'll turn it over to you here.
That, you covered it. I do believe they found him in his apartment, dead with two gunshot wounds to the head. And yes, and they labeled that a suicide. Like you said before, Chris, it is possible for two gunshot wounds to the head when you commit suicide.
It has happened.
It does happen, but it's very, very rare. The thing we need to remember is there has been numerous reports of people that were associated with the Clintons that were also found dead with two gunshot wounds to the back of the head. One was on a beach, and I believe it was in Florida. I can't remember all the details to all of the stuff that I've read, but this one, they found him dead with two gunshot wounds to the back of the head, no gun on the scene, and it was ruled a suicide. Man, if you guys, if the audience read the stuff that we've read about actual events that have taken place, look at the Seth Rich story. He was a Clinton staffer. He gets murdered right in the middle of public. And they didn't steal his wallet. They didn't beat him up. They just shot and killed him. Reports were that he was going to blow the whistle on Hillary Clinton. There's a lot of stories that the Clintons' name comes up in. Now, I'm not saying, per se, that Hillary and Bill Clinton had anything to do with it, but it sure looks fishy. That's all I'm going to say. That will be one of those things that we get to at a different date when we start going through these stories, the Iran-Contra scandal. You know, we're going to try – me and Chris were talking actually earlier about the guy that gave us this platform. And by the way, let me just throw the name out there, Unplugged Radio. That's what you're listening to right now. It's Unplugged Radio on blogtalkradio.com. The man that runs Unplugged Radio gave us an opportunity to share the information that we are sharing with you. And we sure do appreciate that. And we look forward to doing the show every Thursday night. We talk about it during the week, and we're really working hard on growing the numbers. I'm on social media quite often, and I go through a lot of news stories, and I comment as the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show. And the reason I do that is because Chris and I have similar views and similar thoughts on a lot of things. We disagree at times about certain things, but you know what? That's what humans do. We're not going to agree 100% of the time, and that's okay. And just like if you're listening to the show, and you think we're a bunch of jackasses, but you have the right to your opinion. You do not have to like us. But
there are definitely people out there that think we're jackasses, I'll tell you that.
Oh, my God, yes. I've been called every name in the book.
Me too.
I think, you know, like Enos Kanter, he went down and actually changed his legal name because he became a recent American citizen, and he renamed himself Enos Kanter Freedom. So now the back of his jersey actually says Freedom. And the reason he did that is because he knows he came from communism. He knows that we're headed in that direction, and he also knows that is not where you want to go. And basically what I'm saying is if people don't start opening their eyes to their surroundings and being observant to how things are and researching a little bit further past their headline story, we are headed there on a fast track. And when I warn people about Nazi Germany and the Holocaust and things that have led up to the starting of that, people, you're a conspiracy theory, you're nuts. But I always say, we're not at the beginning stages of this. We're not where I'm warning you because it could happen. We are in the middle stages of this. And what New York is about to vote on January 5th, is to have the governor at the governor's discretion to put you into a detention camp indefinitely. How does that not sound like the Holocaust? And you know who they're attacking? They're not attacking the good little people that went and got vaccinated. And by the way, I'm not against you if you went and got vaccinated, because that's your choice. I applaud you for making a decision and standing by it and doing what you did. Have at her. I'm just saying, some of those people that went and got vaccinated are really got the holier-than-thou attitude now, and you can tell that the propaganda that the media has spread of, and even the President of the United States, of get vaccinated, save lives, get vaccinated, do your part, it's a brainwashing campaign and a marketing campaign for the big pharma that this country hasn't witnessed. Ever, I don't believe. I could be wrong on that, but it, I can see it. You can see it, Chris. And the funny thing is when I go to these social media platforms and news channels and I comment as the Disrespected Trucker radio show, immediately the opposition calls me a Trumpster or too bad your orange or the Cheeto or you're the Orange King isn't in office anymore. Those anti-Trump comments. And my favorite part is when they do that, because I get to answer them with, and I rarely do answer them because I usually just leave my comment or my thought and then I move on. And I'll go back to see what everybody else's thoughts are, but I normally don't comment. I do on occasion. But my favorite part of that when they call me a Trumpster is to know that I never voted for Trump, not once. I didn't agree with everything that he did, and there's some things that I thought that he did that were fantastic. And at this point, right now, he's pushing that vaccine. And me and Chris have done extensive research into vaccine injuries and vaccine deaths. And what I find ironic about that is the opposition to Trump said, if Trump told you guys to get vaccinated, you guys would all run out and get vaccinated. You guys are part of a cult. That's exact comments I've heard. The funny thing about that, what I find ironic, is I know a lot of people that support Trump wholeheartedly, and they're not going out. They're not running out to get the vaccine because Trump said to, myself included and Chris included. I didn't vote for Trump. Not once. Again, I did support some of this, but I certainly did not vote for a career politician that has nothing but a history of corruption involving him and his son and China and the Ukraine that I've read numerous articles on, and the media doesn't cover because the media is playing their little propaganda game with the American people, and they are watching and funded by certain corporations and organizations, including a lot of the Democratic Party, a lot of the Republican Party, a lot of our big corporation and big pharma. And they will not tell you the truth. They will tell you bits and pieces of the truth, or it'll be a blip on the radar of what the news coverage that they're, you know, they'll talk about Hunter Biden's laptop, and then they'll say, but there was really nothing in it. I beg to differ. I've read many reports of what was on Hunter Biden's laptop, and what I've read about involves trafficking, child trafficking, pedophilia. It includes deals with China. It includes deals with the Ukraine. And what sickens me is that our media in this country, which is owned by seven people, I believe, Chris, that are all in the same club together, that are, yep, seven corporations. And they're all being funded, just like the CDC and the NIH and all that. They're all being funded by special interest corporations. It's one big circle. Just like George Carlin said, it's one big club, and you're not in it. And that's what we're witnessing right now. Now, guys like me, Chris, if we had a lot more listeners and we talked about the stuff that we talked about, I'm sure we'd have some repercussions. There would be a lot of people that would try to discredit us at all costs. They would dig up our past histories, and they would watch us go over our history with a fine-tooth comb. And the best part of listening to me, I won't include Chris in this because that's up to Chris to share his skeletons in his closet, but I just admitted tonight that I was charged with a felony at one point in my life. I've been in trouble in my life. I have done and made bad decisions in my life. That's been almost two decades ago, if not two decades ago. But I'm also proof that you can be a really big mess up in life, and you can turn your life around, and you can chase the dream and work hard and just be a better person. I've done a lot of things since then that if I told people, you're a convicted felon, you did that, you did this, you did that. I never did anything like armed robbery or stealing cars or nothing like that. But listen, I was a little animal. I was kind of a crazy maniac for a while. And
somebody's ass.
I made bad decisions. Yeah.
Is that about right?
Yeah. Well, here's the deal. That involving that felony, it wasn't about me going after somebody and brutally beating them because I was mad. The situation behind that was I was bringing his girlfriend at the time. It was a bartender. I had a few beers at the bar. She needed a ride home after the bar. I said, I can give you a ride home. Yeah, and I just admitting that I drink and drove. Yeah. So but I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't need to lie to anybody. That's how I sleep at night. But anyway, so I was driving her home. I don't know how her boyfriend seen me or husband seen me or seen her with me, but he did. And he, like, was trying to run me off the road. We finally got to where their apartment was, and I was very angry the way he come at me with his vehicle and tried to run me off the road without knowing what the situation was. He just assumed that, you know, I was doing something with his girlfriend or wife, and I wasn't. But I ended up grabbing him, and at the time I had a Yukon, and I threw him up against my Yukon, and I just, because I was mad, and I set him down, and he went to hit me, and I hit him first. And when I hit him, I broke his jaw. And that's what constituted me getting a felony, and because I broke a bone. I didn't hit him after that, and that was the only hit that I hit him. It was that one hit. I'm not a violent person. I used to be a little, you know, I would fight if I had to, but I'm getting older. I can't move. I'm not as nimble, and I really don't like getting hit because it hurts. But I'm certainly not proud of it, and I'm not going to put the blame anywhere else other than my actions. And I got what the court sentenced me to, and that's the bottom line. So that's where we're at. And the point I told you all this is because when you listen to the show and you hear me and Chris talking, you know, you say to yourself, well, how the hell am I supposed to believe you guys? Are you, I mean, who the hell are you? That's who I am. That's who I was. And you know who I am today. I'm not going to sit here and push blame on anybody else for my actions. And I will tell you the truth 100% of the time. I have no reason to lie to anybody. And am I proud of some of the things that I've done? Absolutely not. But I'm also a realist, and I'll tell you the truth. So there you have it in a nutshell. So when you hear us talking about certain issues with certain things, that's because we are genuinely concerned for this country and the way it's the direction it's headed. We have followers on our page that are running for Congress and that are in Congress. So I'm not saying that just because they follow us, they agree with the 100% of the things that we say. But I do believe that they understand that they relate with us as far as they know where we're going with all this when we talk about things. And we're not a professional radio show like Howard Stern where we got tens of thousands of dollars worth of equipment. We use our cell phones and a blog talk radio platform. You just listen to two guys. What's that, Chris?
We also don't have the corporate sponsors that a show like that has that tries to, some parameters and some rules on what type of content they'll allow you to say on your show because they're worried about you potentially damaging their reputation. So
right.
We have nobody coming back to us, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but, like the big pharmaceutical companies spend millions and millions of dollars advertising every year. So do you think that a news station is going to run anything that sheds big pharmaceutical companies in a negative light when they're receiving millions of dollars of revenue from them? Probably not.
Right. Hey, I see we got a caller. That's cool. We got a little bit of time to talk to a caller. So if your number ends in 6606, I'm going to bring you on the air right now, 6606. You are on the air, and who do we have speaking with us tonight?
Yeah, Merry Christmas, boys. My name is Joe. I was on your show a few weeks ago. How you guys doing?
I wanted to know your opinion. Merry Christmas to you too, Joe.
Thanks. I wanted to know your opinion about the Madeira case. I just finished reading about it about either yesterday or the day before, where he got 110 years of a sentence, and the judge said that if it was up to him, he wouldn't have sentenced the guy to that long a period of time. But because of mandatory sentencing, he had to do what he had to do. What surprised me was that with this guy, now remember, I'm only reading what I read, which is of course written from the bias of the guy that wrote the article, the guy or the girl. He had something like 42 counts of some kind of negligent behavior, forget the exact legal terms, against him because his brakes failed. And for some reason, he failed to take the necessary measures to avoid running into traffic. What do you guys know about that? Because from what I understand, truckers are so upset about it that in the entire state of Colorado, they're boycotting the entire state.
Yeah, they so they held him negligent because he failed to hit an emergency off-ramp. And what happened after the sentencing, the DA actually sent a petition to the judge asking the judge to rethink the sentencing and try to reduce the 110 years to a certain amount of time. One of the victim's widows, she's come out and said that she hoped that he spent 20 years in prison for killing her husband. and rightfully so. Her husband died needlessly, but it goes back to training. This guy didn't have the proper training. His company should have never dispatched him over those mountains, especially knowing that he had never been over those mountains. He's never traveled that terrain. And thirdly, I've been in an accident, a very serious accident out in Utah, where I was coming down off the mountains myself. Except this time I had my brakes. I'm a pretty experienced driver, but I was coming down through a town just north of Salt Lake City. And it's a 50-mile-an-hour speed limit there, and I was doing probably 47. I remember, for some reason, looking at my speedometer right before I hit that green light. But I hit a green traffic light, and right as I hit the intersection, a white pickup pulled right out in front of me. And at the last second, I swerved to the left. I mean, and I say last second, it was the last split second. And by me making that maneuver, instead of hitting that pickup in the passenger side door where there was a passenger, I hit him right behind it in the pickup box. And the impact of that accident was so great. It tore the drive shaft out of the transmission.
Right.
It tore the axle off the pickup. It was bad. I got out and I ran back to the people. And it totaled my semi, by the way. I ran back there, and they were out of their pickup, and they were okay. Nobody didn't even have a scratch, surprisingly. But I remember that second. The point I'm getting at, Joe, is the fear that overtook me, because I knew at that moment I'm going to hit that pickup. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Right.
The fear that washed over me scared the ever living bejesus out of me, and I couldn't imagine a kid that's 23 years old at the time going over I-70 in the mountains coming down into Denver is a very steep decline for a very long time. I couldn't imagine losing my brakes at 23 years old and not knowing what to do. And I think what a lot of guys are upset about is that he passed that emergency exit ramp, and where he could have saved all those lives on a split-second decision. And
yeah.
I just try to put myself back at 23, Joe, inexperienced, and if that would have happened to me, what would I have done? I know what I'd do now as an experienced driver, but I don't know what I would have done as an inexperienced driver. But as far as the sentencing goes, 110 years, do I think it's too much? My opinion on that matter is yes, and here's why. It sets a dangerous precedent for the trucking industry. Now, anytime somebody gets in an accident, whether they're negligent or not, they're going to go back and look for a mechanical failure on your truck, something small, something little, and the prosecution is going to look at that as grounds to prosecute you to the fullest extent of the law. Now, there was an accident involving a semi-driver just recently. He was sentenced. It happened in Nebraska. He killed three people in a construction zone. He was sentenced to 3 to 5 years in prison for killing three people, and he was found negligent in that accident also. And an argument I hear, Joe, is people, well, different states, different laws. You know what? I understand that concept. Some are concurrently, some are consecutively, as far as how you got to serve your sentence. But there's got to be a nationwide standard on how we sentence people for accidents, because this Colorado accident is exactly what it's called, an accident. And should he serve time? Absolutely. And we're not saying he's not guilty. But 110 years for an accident is excessive, in my opinion.
Well, when you say, I believe it's an accident as well. I don't think, when you say he's inexperienced, is that his fault or is that the company's fault? I also heard that he was told that the truck had bad brakes and the company allowed him to drive. If that's the case, then the company should also be liable.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, absolutely. So he's a Cuban immigrant that comes over here. He just wants to chase the American dream and provide for his family, right? So he obtains his CDL. How does he obtain a CDL? By going through the DMV in Texas. According to the FMCSA regulations, it's right in the green book that you're not allowed to obtain a CDL and travel out of the state of Texas if you cannot speak English and read English fluently, which he could not. So his company also had to have known that, because obviously when you speak to him and he doesn't speak English, he should have never been allowed to leave the state of Texas. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So his company absolutely is responsible or shares some of the responsibility for what happened. But so does the DOT, the DMV, the FMCSA for not having tighter safety regulations for people getting their CDL and enforcing that. And that company, in civil lawsuits, I surely hope that they go after that guy who's also named as part owner of a new trucking company or has some involvement in it anyway. He certainly needs to be shut down. He should never be anywhere near a trucking company ever again in his entire life. I don't even want him to fix a valve stem on a tire. He shouldn't have anything to do with the trucking industry. And unfortunately, four people lost their lives in that accident. And we certainly send those families our deepest condolences.
Yeah, when I was on your show last time, either I learned from you guys, or I learned subsequent after the show, was that to obtain a CDL license, you don't need to fulfill certain regulations anymore. It's too easy. And if it's too easy, then you're going to get people like Rodera, which is whatever his name is, which are accidents waiting to happen.
Absolutely. And we're seeing this every winter. Now, it happened just this morning in Wisconsin, a 100-vehicle pileup involving many, many 18-wheeled semis. What is happening is you're allowing these people to get their CDLs without the proper training. They drive way too fast for road conditions. In this case, they had freezing rain the night before or that morning. Wyoming, you see a bunch of them on I-80 all the time. Iowa last year. These guys are racing that ELD, the clock. And a study just came out recently where it says that the ELD was supposed to save 29 lives a year. It just came out that the ELD, since it's been implemented, the accident rate among big trucks has actually gone up when it was supposed to go down. So in my opinion, because I'm a professional truck driver, that ELD should be scrapped immediately, and they need to find the root causes of why the accidents went up, which I can tell you what that is, and that is because people are racing that clock. And the people in the industry say, well, when you had the paper logs, you were cheating. No, I was using common sense. That's what I call it. Yeah, did I put a time that wasn't really correct in my logbook, per se? Yeah, I did, because I stopped and slept for 2 hours when I needed to sleep, but I still had a load to run and I still had a paycheck to make. So I did what I knew was right and safe for not only me, but for everybody out on the road. Now, these people are racing that clock. It's staring them in the face all day long, and now they're driving at full speed on icy conditions and snowy conditions, causing major accidents and dangerous highways. That's my opinion, Joe.
Mm. And I think it's a good one. I also, either you or your co-host said that the government should step in to make sure that we have tighter regulations. Theoretically, yeah. But the thing is that every time the government steps into anything, they step into crap. They make things worse. They have people who know nothing about whatever it is that they're trying to regulate, and they either over-regulate, under-regulate, or badly regulate. What's the answer outside of the government? I think the marketplace would do a hell of a lot better job. I think those who suffer accidents, they would suffer a loss of profits. They would then tighten up their particular, no, even trucking industry or any industry. Whatever they do that makes them suffer profits, they would then correct the problems on their own. However, people rely on the government because we believe the government is there to protect us. I don't believe it. I think the government, even if it started out to protect us, has evolved and actually devolved into nothing more than just a power grab for, if not sociopaths, people who just don't give a damn about the American citizen. That's my opinion.
No, and you know what, Joe, he hit the nail on the head. I was sitting here nodding my head the whole time you're talking. I've said it all along. We're being ruled at this point, ruled by sociopaths and narcissistic crazy people. And you're right. Whenever the government gets involved and we say we need regulations on this, we don't need more regulations. What we need is more safety expectations and maybe, I guess you could call it regulation in some sort. But what we're asking for is the real American truck driver that's been out here for 15, 20, 25, 30-plus years to sit at that table with a group of legislators and discuss these matters professionally and with experience. And we can sit there and tell them why this won't work because of that, or why that won't work because of this. But they don't want to hear us. You know, where they hear what whatever wallet is filling up their back pocket, the ATA. They go in there with their lobbyists, and they lobby Washington, D.C. Unfortunately, that's how Washington, D.C. is run now. It's run by lobbyists. Whoever's got the biggest pocketbook, that's who gets the favorable legislation. And at the end of the day, you're right, Joe, it comes down to profits over safety. And, on that note, Joe, we got to get wrap this show up, and I do appreciate your phone call,
okay.
Joe, and your thoughts, as always.
All right, and guys, have a Merry Christmas and be safe, and talk to you when I talk to you.
All right, thanks all again, right. Joe, and you have a Merry Christmas too, my friend.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, that was Joe, everybody, and we're going to wrap this show up. We had a nice, interesting few callers there tonight, and we appreciate that. We like to hear your point of view, whether it's in agreeance or disagreeance. It gives us something to think about. And maybe our point of view will give you something to think about, too. You want to add anything, Chris, before we wrap this up?
You know what? I'm going to give one final thought on this last conversation we just had with Joe. Back before the ELD mandate was first announced, not before it became effective, but before the ELD mandate was announced, there was an electronics company that some people knew of called Qualcomm. Their stock price was trading in the $30 range prior to that announcement. For those that don't know, Qualcomm is one of the biggest manufacturers of the electronic logging devices that are required to be in these trucks these days. As soon as that ELD mandate was announced that it was coming down the line, their stock price started ticking up and ticking up and ticking up. That stock price closed today at $182 per share. That is what the ELD mandate has done. That jump in stock price from the $30 range to $182 range, that has made a lot of people very wealthy. People has been paid for by innocent blood on U.S. highways, because that electronic logging device mandate has caused more accidents. And that's all I got to say about that in the words of Forrest Gump.
In the words of Forrest Gump, my hero. But you know what? We had a lot to talk about tonight, and we're going to have a lot to talk about next week. We always do, because there's always something that happens, and usually it's right before we go on air, so we don't get a lot of chance to research some things, but we all have opinions, right? But anyway, everybody, we appreciate you listening to the show, the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show, coming out at you live every Thursday night, 7 p.m. Central, only on Unplugged Radio. We would appreciate it if you share our broadcast out with your friends and family. And the more support we can get, the more truth we can get out there, and the more we can get the hate. Anyway, on that note, I hope you guys, every one of you that are listening to the program and everyone out there, that you have a very, very Merry Christmas. And we will be back next week on Thursday before New Year's. But I want you to have a very Merry Christmas, and I also want you to all please travel safe and enjoy your time with your loved ones, and spend as much happy moments as you can this Christmas with your loved ones. And on that note, Merry Christmas, good night, and God bless.